activate the view screen, and turn on your universal translators, because it is time for another Galactic Netcast.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This Earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It's Thursday, February 27th, 2014. Welcome to another Galactic Netcast. This is the Alien Invasion number 98. We're almost to 100, Brad.
Two away.
Mm-hmm.
They said it would never happen.
Nobody said that, Brad.
Oh, that's right.
Not a damn person said that. I was maybe thinking it in the back of my head, but I don't think people ever said it. I don't think. You are Brad Ludwig from Wausau, Wisconsin. I am Dave Nelson from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul for now. And Anessa, our third host, is out this week. And you and I are kicking it old school, my friend.
Back to our roots, the two-man show.
Yeah, this is how we started. Before that lady got in the way of things.
Curse Moines! My girlfriend.
Yeah.
Wait, I take that back.
she may be Son watching or listening to this somewhere.
She probably is.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would not say anything bad. All right. So this is the show where we talk about aliens in science fiction, science, real life, all that stuff. Aliens as in extraterrestrial aliens. The show is divided into three sections, the news, the creature feature. That's the spotlight of a certain kind of alien, and our picks for the week. If you would like to watch us do the show live, you can do that on our live page, galacticnetcasts.com/live, or youtube.com/galacticnetcast. Actually, live and archive. We archive the video. Actually, we don't. YouTube does us the favor of archiving the video of this show, and we thank YouTube for doing that.
It's very kind of them.
Yeah. They're nice people, those YouTube people.
Those YouTube folks, they're really nice. They do nice things for us.
I was wondering how long it would take to break out the old man voice. I think we set a record.
Right out of the gate, practically.
All right, let's get the show on the road. We start with this right here. Hang on 1 second. Here we go.
In the news.
All right. You've got the first story, my friend. Go ahead.
So I saw this story and I was really excited about it. They've discovered water in an atmosphere of a nearby alien planet.
Wait a second. How do they know there's water in that atmosphere of that nearby planet? Tell me.
Well, I'm glad you asked that because they have a telescope system. Well, I'll get to it in just a sec here. They detected water vapor in an atmosphere in one of the first alien planets ever identified by astronomers. This, of all places, this story is from Fox News. I'll lay that out there right off the bat.
Okay.
Advances in the technique used to scan the atmosphere of this particular nearby neighbor, which is considered what they call a hot Jupiter. And I'll get to an explanation of what that is in just a sec. This technique can be used to help scientists determine how many billions of planets in the Milky Way contain water like Earth. And I read a story, I think, last week where they identified, I think, 705 more alien planets, exoplanets that could possibly
Not necessarily
support life, but they've identified 705 more.
Yeah, that was actually within the last couple of days, and we posted that story on our social feeds, I think, today or yesterday. Yeah, Kepler keeps on discovering all these planets, 750-some.
Yep. Yeah, and the number keeps growing, so they're saying that before the thought was we had far more stars than planets, but planets seem to actually kind of come, it would seem at least from what they've discovered, that that's kind of a package deal, that there's enough detritus that's left over from the formation of a star to create or leave small planets or planetoids or dwarf planets like Pluto is now considered. Thank you, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Anyway, I love the name of this exoplanet. Tau Boatis B.
Okay,
I think I'm pronouncing it right.
Oh my God, are we starting to actually name planets? We're not just numbering them anymore?
Well, I think it might. That's a good question. I think that they are maybe doing a little bit of both. Because this actual exoplanet was one of the first discovered. It was discovered in 1996.
Okay.
It's one of the early ones that were discovered.
Oh, I bet you they have since. There's been so many that they haven't had a chance to like name them all. So that's where we get all those numbers from.
Either that, or at the time they were thinking that exoplanets were so rare, they just went, well, we'll give them names. And then they discovered that, well, they're actually fairly common and just went, screw it, we'll just give them numbers.
And this name is totally a Star Trek planet name, isn't it?
I know it is. I read it and I'm like, oh, I think the Enterprise orbited that planet once. So this was discovered in 1996 when they were just, like I said before, they were just starting to search for exoplanets at this point in time, and it was one of the first ones discovered. It's only 51 light years away.
Wow.
And I say only. That would mean traveling 51 years at the speed of light, but that is really close by. And it's one of the nearest known exoplanets to Earth, so it's a close neighbor. The planet is considered a hot Jupiter because it is a massive gas giant that orbits close to its parent star. So it's kind of like our Jupiter if it were maybe shoved closer to like the Mars-Earth orbit, so it would be in a little bit further. To analyze the atmosphere surrounding Tau Boatis B, scientists looked at its faint glow. Different types of molecules emit different wavelengths of light. So they use a spectrograph to actually look through the telescope, essentially. They gather the light through the telescope and run it through the spectrograph, and they can actually determine from the wavelengths of the light that's coming through the telescope what elements would reflect that particular wavelength of light.
That's smart of them. They must be scientists.
Yeah. They are absolutely scientists. So they're able to, you know, there's a certain wavelength for sodium, and then there's one for water, so they can break this down, the light that's reflected back. Now, the one interesting thing about Tau Boatis B is it doesn't transit in front of the parent star from our vantage point. So in other words, how we look typically at our solar system, we kind of view it as it's mostly at a flat plane, right? So we're all kind of at the same level, but they're actually tilted almost 90 degrees from us. So instead of, you know, circling around the star on a horizontal plane, it actually is to us circling around its star on a vertical plane.
So it's not even enough with their star to get that transit effect, is what you're saying.
Correct. So normally what would happen to identify an exoplanet, they do long-term Kepler has been the biggest boon to discovering exoplanets that we have right now. And what they do is they'll look at repetitive views, different photos, to see if a star's light dims briefly. And that means that a planet has moved or transited in front of the star. And that's how you determine if there's an exoplanet. But Tau Boatis B is unusual because that whole solar system is tilted, like I said, on a vertical plane compared to us. So I think because it was close by, it might have been easier to see, and that's why we kind of know a little bit more about it. And now that we have more advanced equipment than we did in 1996, they're able to kind of go back and take a look at some of these and reanalyze them and find some more information. And they're using a spectrograph that is the NIRSPEC, the Near Infrared Echelle Spectrograph, at the Keck Observatory in Hawaii is where this is located. Now, they had previously used the same technique, the spectrograph breakdown of the halo, essentially, around the glow around Tau Boatis B, and determined that it had carbon monoxide around the planet, which is, they think, is the second most common gas in atmospheres of a hot Jupiter after hydrogen. So, essentially, Tau Boatis B is like a failed attempt at a second star in that solar system. So that's really, really kind of fascinating.
Do you think we'll get to the point someday where we know so much about our galaxy and the stars and planets that are nearby us that we get to the point where we're like, God, we have to go out and just discover it. Just go out and try to find to get there, you know? It's like the
Well, we're kind of like that creepy neighbor that's got the binoculars and staring over the fence and looking at everything, and eventually you're just going to have to come out from behind the fence and actually like deliver cookies to your neighbor and stop being a creeper.
So we're galactic creepers is what you're saying.
We're galactic creepers.
Okay.
Show title.
Yep, I was thinking the same thing.
Caltech professor Jeffrey Blake said that while the current state of the technique cannot detect Earth-like planets around stars like the Sun, with the Keck Observatory, it should soon be possible to study atmospheres of so-called super-Earth planets being discovered around nearby low-mass stars, many of which do not transit. So again, like a vertical plane compared to us. So the continued improvement of the technology that we have is giving us more insight to the universe around us, which is just a really exciting time for astronomy and you know, the possible discovery of alien life elsewhere in our galaxy.
And am I right by saying that Kepler is dead? Isn't Kepler not working anymore, and they're just going through?
Oh, I'm like, no, Johannes Kepler died a while ago, if that's what you're asking. You know, that's a good I thought it was still in operation. No, it is still in operation.
Okay, maybe it's another probe or satellite I'm thinking of. That
No, you're right. There was another one that died. I even remember what this stinking thing looks like, but I can't remember what it is. Well, if any of our savvy listeners know, they can always shoot us an email or contact us and let us know.
Yeah, good time to talk about contacting us. We've got an email address, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, and the voicemail number is 805-328-3966. I almost did it. I was this close to doing that by memory, Brad. You'd think after 98 shows I'd know that, but I don't have the best memory in the world.
No, it's kind of like me and typing. If I don't think about the fact that I'm typing, I type fine. If I think about the fact that I'm typing, I have to look at the keyboard.
It's like when you become really self-aware, and that's when problems start.
You get self-conscious of it, and you're like, oh, now I have to look.
Yep, exactly. All right, so great first story. Thank you, Brad. Let's move on from the real to the fake. 12 aliens who came to Earth to save humanity. And this is a great story that came out of or came from io9.com. They profiled the number of aliens who came to Earth trying to help us change our ways. For the most part, we tried to kill them. So
yes.
Think of these aliens as the savior, like the Christ savior, like the Jesus Christ of aliens. You know, they come here preaching the good word. You know, you're doing it wrong, Earthlings, and then we end up killing them. So,
yeah, looking at this list that, and you only pulled a section of the list apart, but yeah, the first two here, absolutely.
Yeah, we talked about Klaatu last week from the day the Earth stood still, and yep. Poor Klaatu. You know, he comes bearing love, peace, and a warning that if you spread your violence into space, you'll be destroyed. A soldier, basically, who's freaked out by the whole deal, shoots him. Then he's led away. And correct me if I get this wrong, Brad. He's led away by the military. He escapes, and then he hangs out with a family for a while, right? Like a normal...
Yeah, well, he ends up going to, like, a boarding house where, you know, it's a house that has a number of rooms that are for rent that people live in, you know, work in. That's where he ends up in hiding so he can learn more about the humans.
And then he thinks that they're all he's changing his mind about humans, and then they find him, right? And then they kill him, basically.
Yeah, he gets shot again.
Poor guy. Poor Klaatu. Okay, so the next one on the list is Valentine Michael Smith. Never heard of this guy. Never heard of this. Have you watched this movie, Stranger in a Strange Stranger in a Strange Land?
I was actually thinking of The Man Who Fell to Earth.
Oh, that is on the list. That is on this list. No, this is something else. Stranger in a Strange Land. You know, I should have looked this up.
I know a little bit about... I haven't read... I may have read one Heinlein book, maybe.
Okay.
This is on my list of things to read, but I've not sat down to actually read it yet.
Now, was this only a book, or was this a book that was made into a movie?
You know, that's a good question.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now.
I'm in IMDb right now. I think they've...
It was, novel 1961, Robert Heinlein. And I'm not seeing anything about it being turned into a movie.
No. There's been talks, but nothing's ever really...
Okay, all right.
...come of it.
So basically, this character... His name is Valentine Michael Smith. He is an alien, but he was raised by them. First human child born on Mars. He was also the sole survivor of a group of humans that were there, apparently. Then he was taken by the native Martians, who taught him their own psychic powers. A new mission eventually comes to Mars and brings Smith back to Earth, where he's bewildered. I love that word. Bewildered by pretty much everything about humanity, including religion. Eventually, he starts his own religion, which he's eventually killed for. So he pretty much turned into Jesus Christ, and they killed him for it. All right. There was more about him I didn't include. You can check it out, the whole explanation, on the io9.com article we'll have in the show notes. Now, here's my favorite one. Of the ones that I included here. The Blood Beast. The Blood Beast.
He's the one that came to save us all.
Yeah,
okay.
You'd think a person by the name or a creature by the name of the Blood Beast would not be coming to save Earthlings. But, in fact, that was the case. He hitched a ride on a rocket ship and offers his people's help in advancing Earth's technology, science, and all that good stuff. And then warning them of the danger of nuclear weapons, which his own people annihilated themselves with. Unfortunately, to get to this point, the Blood Beasts impregnated the male pilot of the rocket ship with Blood Beast's babies and beheaded a scientist in order to learn English. He beheaded a scientist, Brad, in order to learn our language. All right. Hey, maybe they, you know, instead of teaching classes in school, let's just behead each other and get it over with. How about that?
No.
No? You're not cool with that?
I think I'd switch schools.
Okay. Yeah, you're probably right. I don't want to be beheaded. And, okay, finally, final one on my list. Again, you can check out this whole list at io9.com. Thomas Jerome Newton, the man who fell to Earth, a.k.a. David Bowie. He actually came to Earth to save his native Mars by amassing enough wealth to finance a spaceship to take badly needed water to his family, who may be the sole Martian survivors. But the Martian technology he created as Newton to make money certainly benefited humanity, even if it wasn't his primary goal. Alas, Newton succumbs to human vices, such as booze and sex. I mean, who wouldn't, right? And is eventually captured by the government just before he can complete his mission, where he basically gives up everything. It's a sad story.
It's incredibly sad, and what causes him to give up on everything. In the book, it's not Mars. He's actually further away. So everything that he does is to help advance human technology so he can build a ship so he can get back with water, because that's what the planet needs, at least in the book. Basically, the U.S. government screws him over.
Right. Wow, that's not a surprise at all. That never happens.
Yeah, that happened in the day the Earth stood still, and seems to be a repeated theme.
Leave it to us humans to screw everything up. Now, did you see the movie of The Man Who Fell to Earth?
No, I have not.
I haven't either. I'm scared of it.
And why? I am too.
And why is Mars always the default? Because, I mean, especially for, okay.
I think at the time that, the movie came out in the 60s. So the thought of traveling to Mars to us at the time was very distant. I mean, we were going to the moon, and that was a far, far enough journey. Mm-hmm. So I think they might have scaled it back for slight believability in a movie format.
But didn't we know by then that there was no possibility of that there would be life on Mars, or life would have the atmosphere to support life?
I'm sure. Yeah, we absolutely did. I can't remember who, because we've dropped. No, was it Russia dropped, went to Mercury? Did we go to, I'm trying to remember all the different probes that have been launched. And yeah, we've definitely known that there's no,
Russia, yeah.
Way
Russia
there's
went,
life.
Russia went to Venus. Russia sent probes to Venus. And by Viking probes, that was early 70s or mid 70s, right? But before then, we had to have had some kind of probe sent to those planets to prove the fact that their atmospheres were not capable of supporting life.
Yeah, okay, so Mariner 10 was the first probe sent to Mercury. Venera 3 was the first one that went to Venus. Let's see. Mariner 9 landed on Mars. That was ours.
What year was that?
That was 71.
Okay.
So, no, that would have been after. Well, I think that we had a good idea, but, yeah. This is 71 that Mariner 9 landed.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, I guess they have to pick some planet. Why not Mars? Why not Mars?
Why not?
Yeah. All right. So those are four out of the, I don't know, there's like 10 or something. Or no, 12 aliens.
12.
Yeah, 12 aliens who came to Earth to save humanity but ended up being killed by stupid humans. All right, since we don't have a third person, I included a third story. Just because I know that, and this one came to mind first because both you and I are big Doctor Who fans.
So is Anessa.
Anessa is as well, and a lot of our listeners are, except for that one guy that emailed in to complain that we were talking about too much
he
Dr.
didn't
Who.
No, he didn't say he didn't like Doctor Who. He just said that we covered it a lot, and in his defense,
yes,
we did.
Yeah, okay. And we haven't talked about Doctor Who for a long time, and this is a good story to bring it back, at least for one story, at least. I just said
Absolutely.
At least twice. Peter Capaldi could be the Doctor for just one season. Interesting, right?
I don't buy it.
Okay, this is a huge rumor from the Mirror in London. The Mirror, by the way, is basically a tabloid. It's not really a genuine newspaper. It's a lot of fluff. So take that with a huge grain of salt. So apparently, the plan all along was to bring Capaldi in for just one season as a transitional doctor in order to steer the show in a new direction and pave the way for an even more radical and possibly more controversial choice for the role.
Capaldi has said he's such a huge fan. If you were a huge fan and that was something that you had watched growing up, would you be willing to just go, a season?
But
Eccleston did, but Eccleston had different circumstances.
Yeah, it was his choice. He wanted to leave the show. The producers didn't want him to be on the show for one season.
And he felt he was getting a raw deal at the BBC, and you know, by all accounts, it sounds like he kind of was. But now there's such huge support for the show. They want to keep it around, whereas when Eccleston was in there, he wasn't sure if he was going to have a job tomorrow. This is probably one of the more stable jobs that you can have in acting in the UK, I think, at this point. Once you've got the gig, you could probably have it for as long as you want it.
But what if, Capaldi's a huge Doctor Who fan. It's documented. He wrote into the show when he was a young age. Maybe they approached him and said, you know, we only need you for a season. Would you still want to go be on the show? And being such a fan, wouldn't you take it anyways just to be the Doctor for one season? I mean, it's your lifelong dream of being the Doctor, if only for one season.
That's a very good question. I'd almost walk away from it.
Really? I wouldn't.
I mean, you look at how long Tennant and... I don't think I could... I wouldn't want to do it for a season. I'd want to... Because, I mean, you look at Matt Smith or Tennant's first seasons. It's not until they got towards the end of that first season or into the second where their form of the Doctor fully has gelled.
But Brad, this is your lifelong dream to be the Time Lord, to be the Doctor in the TARDIS, okay? It's one season or nothing. One season or nothing. You take the one season. Your only chance. Your only chance to be the Doctor.
Yeah, I guess. But God, Capaldi's got... He's not just a dude they found off the street, though. I mean, he's got a lot of cred as a writer, as a actor. I would almost be slightly insulted. Yeah, you get to be it for one season.
But maybe he goes into it, you know. Maybe he realizes. I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah. Well, I think I get where you're coming from on this, but I just
Okay. You're only going to be the Doctor for one season, but it's a pivotal season. There's going to be some historical episodes here. You know, they're going to be talking about your Doctor for years and years to come. You are the linchpin in sending the series into an entirely different new direction, full of amazing things. So it's you're the catalyst for change, Capaldi. Do you take the job?
Yeah, maybe. I'm only going to concede a maybe to you.
I almost,
that's all you get.
I almost turned you around, Brad. Almost.
Almost.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see. It's the mirror. So it's probably just trying to get headlines, that's all.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so that is it. We already talked about letting us know, giving us feedback, the numbers and the email address. So let's move on to, hang on, I'm having a hard time. I'm having a hard time with window management tonight, Brad.
You need a third monitor is what you need.
I know, here we go.
And now it's time for Creature Feature.
And tonight's Creature Feature is actually a request, and I believe this is the first, if I'm not mistaken, which I could be, Brad, do you remember, is this the first Creature Feature that's been, that's been requested?
Yeah, this is the first.
Okay. So this came from Jeff from California. Hey, Jeff. And he says, hey, guys, Jeff from California. I think, hang on. What's his name? Jason. I think Jason set a standard. I think everybody after Jason, because Jeff is saying, hey, Jeff from California here. Or do you think that's just a traditional greeting?
I don't know, because, Jason's from Kansas.
Yeah, and Jeff from California.
Jeff from California.
So maybe that is the only way to get on the show, they're thinking. I need to start my email with my name from where I'm from here.
See, but the nice thing about that is it definitely gives, you know, spatial awareness of where they're at to the listener and to us.
Yeah.
It's really cool. I mean, when you asked me to be on this show, I'm like, oh yeah, okay. I never thought we'd get, you know, feedback from somebody from Kansas
or John,
or, you know, big John from Australia, and now we've got Jeff here from California.
We haven't had many people from Europe. I'd like to hear from somebody that lives in, you know, Northern Europe. Maybe the Eastern Bloc countries, or the former Eastern Bloc countries, the Ukraine. Oh, they're kind of busy these days.
They're very busy right now.
All right. So Jeff, he says, not sure if you guys have done this creature feature yet, but the aliens from the TV show Defying Gravity would definitely be an interesting feature. Thanks for the great podcasts. I love it. And we love you for listening, Jeff. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff.
For emailing in. Yeah, interesting choice. And I kind of forgot about these guys. I mean, I was a fan of the show Defying Gravity. Not apparently a fan enough to watch the series all the way through, because once I knew they were canceling the show, I'm like, you know what? I don't want to invest any more time in this. And never watched the rest of the episodes. And I do that sometimes where I don't want the series to end in my mind, so I don't watch the rest of the episodes. But it's an interesting concept. So the Betas, that's the name of these aliens, the Betas from Defying Gravity. And the show was a multinationally produced space travel series, aired August through October 2009 on ABC and CTV. Set in the year 2052, the series follows 8 astronauts on a 6-year space mission through the solar system, during which they're monitored from Earth via real-time communication systems. And one of the great things about the show was they had to do, like, commercials for their sponsors. Like, these companies pretty much bankrolled the whole mission. So during their mission, they had to stop, like, their important scientific experiments and, like, important things they had to do on the ship and actually do commercials that were beamed back to Earth. It was pretty funny. You know, like actual products they were endorsing and stuff like that. It was quite humorous. So that was the mission, to go through the solar system. So they thought. Turns out the Beta, which was this thing in one of the cargo bays, was pulling the strings and telling them or pushing them towards the eventual goal. Now, the Beta is a mysterious mysterious cargo. They call it the cargo or the object or simply it. It was something that was in this, like, drawer, as I recall, a drawer in one of the cargo bays that Turned out it was an actual organic, sentient, and alive being, and it wasn't composed of elements found on the periodic table.
Interesting.
Yeah. It has the ability to communicate through visions or hallucinations, and has an audible call similar to a whale song. And these hallucinations usually, if not always, have strong ties to each person's past, notably events connected to feelings of deep regret or guilt. Beta also seems to be able to influence dreams. So you had your visions, you had your dreams, and all of it was influenced by the beta or it or the object in the cargo bay aboard the Antares spaceship in Defying Gravity.
Interesting.
The show reminded me a lot of 2001 Space Odyssey. It had that, because they show it a lot of like what you thought was real life, but turned out to be visions. Like, you think it's real at first, but then it turns out to be totally like a vision created by the beta.
Huh.
And another interesting thing of this show was it had flashbacks. So you'd learn about the characters through flashbacks. And I believe that all the episodes are available on Amazon. So we'll put the links in the on the website and in the show notes. You can go check it out for yourself. And I would love people's opinions or their reviews. I'd love if you get a chance to watch the show. Did you ever watch the show, Brad?
No.
Defying Gravity?
At that, 2009. Yeah, I still don't watch network television. I mean, I watch stuff on Hulu, but I don't think that ever really grabbed my attention.
It was okay. One of the problems with it, it was on in early summer, so people were still busy. It was like one of the first shows of the new season in 2009. And I knew it from the start. It wasn't going to make it because it was a science fiction show. It took place in space, and it was on major network TV, ABC. So I knew it wasn't going to succeed, unfortunately.
Although Ron Livingston, I'm a big fan of Ron Livingston.
Oh, yeah.
Livingston.
Yeah, love that guy.
Band of Brothers and Office Space.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll put the links in the show notes and on the website, in the store. And that's a way that you can help support Galactic Netcasts by your purchase of items in the store, including Defying Gravity, so you can experience the betas for yourself. And that is the creature feature. All right, let's move on to our picks. Brad, you're up first.
So, I've kind of been... I mentioned I have a Hulu subscription. So I've actually started digging into the movies that they have available. It's not just TV, but they do have movies available if you get the Hulu Plus subscription. So I decided to take a look at some more of what they had to offer, and I found something that seemed kind of interesting. It's called The Quartermass Experiment. And this was done in 2005. I'm going to throw out some names here of actors and see if you can identify who they might be or where you might know them from.
Okay. I like games.
The first one, Mark Gatiss.
Hmm. Last name sounds familiar.
Yes.
Okay.
He has written for Doctor Who.
Oh, okay.
And he appeared in an episode during the Tennant run as Doctor, I believe Doctor Lazarus.
Oh, I know. I remember Doctor Lazarus. What episode was that?
That was the one where he's a very old scientist and he wants to regain his youth and he messes about with his DNA and turns himself into a monster, essentially. I believe it's a Martha episode.
Okay, all right.
Or wait. I can't remember if it's a Martha episode or not, no. Darn it.
Okay, who's next on the list of people in this?
Oh, I'm sorry. No. David Tennant appears in this.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. Now I'm going to throw some tougher ones at you. Jason Fleming?
Nope, I have no idea.
I recognized him right away, and that's only because I've watched The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen repeatedly.
Okay.
He actually played Dr. Jekyll in the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen movie. And the last one that I recognized, a gentleman named Andrew Scott, which I'm going to let you off the hook right away.
No, I know this. Played... I got this one. It's Moriarty from Sherlock.
Oh! You're killing me.
No, I read that on the document.
Curse you for reading the actual document at which we do the show from. All right. God, an amazing group of people. And like I said, this is 2005, so this actually was done on BBC 4, I believe, 8 months before Tennant is named the new Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it was like his – do you think this was maybe his tryout to be the Doctor? Maybe they saw him on this and were like pretty impressed?
Well, he had a pretty decent body of work before then. So I think that, if anything, maybe he might have gotten into Mark Gatiss's view a little bit more, having worked together, and Gatiss being a writer for the show, that this project may have actually helped him get on the short list. So... God, just an amazing group of people for something that I'm kind of wondering, because this is actually a remake of a 1951 or 53, I think it was 53, the Quartermass Experiment, black and white B-movie, horror sci-fi, the same premise, slightly updated, modernized a little bit more. Obviously, the technology has changed a bit. Basically, a doctor of mathematics by the name of Quartermass heads up a team of scientists who and a small group of astronauts, two Brits and a actual German astrophysicist, who fly up in a rocket that's launched. It's a British mission, but it's launched from Australia, and they go into space farther than any rocket has gone before, about, what'd they say, 500,000 miles something like that. The rocket is lost. They lose contact with the rocket for about 2 days, a little over 2 days, and they finally catch the rocket. It's coming back to Earth. And they end up just barely saving the rocket, and only one astronaut of the three come out of the ship. So they're keeping a close eye on him, and there's something obviously very medically wrong with him, and they're trying to determine what it is. And as the pieces start to fall into place, they have a brush with the fantastical. Things look bad for the Earth, but our Dr. Quartermass is there to save the day. What's really interesting is the spelling. I mean, obviously, you're looking at the document here. You see it says the Quartermass Experiment, how we pronounce Quartermass. They kept a lot of the actors would say Quartermass. It was like a fast way of saying it that was still appropriate for, I don't know if it's a British thing. It almost seems like, and I did a little bit more research, they actually made a couple of Quartermass films. So I don't know if he was like a British sort of a Flash Gordon-esque. I mean, not obviously of that entire genre, but maybe a more updated Doc Savage, a brilliant experimenting kind of guy that has these adventures.
Okay.
So I didn't research it that far to find out, but It's very, very dramatic.
Is it melodramatic? Like
a little, it's a little over the top. Okay. A little over the top. And the ending of it left me feeling a little cold.
Okay. But this being on the Alien Invasion podcast and being a pick on the Alien Invasion podcast, I'm guessing there are aliens involved here somehow?
Yes. Where I said one astronaut came out of the rocket, a force, an energy, actually took the three and combined them into one body.
Oh, okay.
Forced them together.
Okay.
To give a vessel for itself and to kind of better understand physicality.
Okay. So, from
what they understood, it was a being that was originally of energy that took on a physical form, and didn't quite know what to do with it, and was looking to absorb all forms of matter. It absorbed plant matter. It absorbed rocks. you as the viewer don't actually see like CGI weirdness of all this happening. It's sort of kind of keeps true to the level of probably practical effects of the 50s, where you don't see it, you get hints of it here and there. So, you know, it obviously kind of keeps the production costs down. So it's a lot of theater of the mind as to what is kind of going on with it bringing things to itself.
Kind of like those types of movies and TV shows better sometimes than actually seeing the thing change or whatever alien or whatever crazy thing that they'd have to create it out of CGI. I kind of like the whole, you know, we're telling you that it is, so it is.
Yeah, there was a little bit of practical effects. Like you do get glimpses of its face as it escapes from the facility, that they're, you know, trying to keep a close eye on him, or this being, and you actually do get a quick look at the hand or the arm of this creature, and seeing that it is changing and getting that general sense of metamorphosis. So, I wouldn't, out of 5 stars, I'd probably give it 2.
Okay. Well, at least
maybe 2.5 because of the, you know, of Gaddis and Tennant and Scott, and I've only seen a little bit of Fleming's work before, but I do like him. So
if you have a Hulu Plus subscription, definitely check it out there. And we'll try to see if it's on Amazon and put the links in the show notes and on the store at galacticnetcast.com. All right.
They do have the original. Well, there's a Hammer. Yeah, the Hammer film version from 1956 is definitely available on DVD.
Okay. We'll put that version up then. You know? Maybe the original will be better than this remake.
And actually, BBC DVD does have a 3-pack of the Quartermass Experiment, the original BBC version, Quartermass 2, and Quartermass and the Pit.
Interesting. All right. Sweet. All right. Thank you, Brad. Good pick. My pick this week is a show which you may have heard of called Starcrossed. And we had talked about this on a previous episode or two. It's the brand new series on CW. And the pilot episode finally became available on Hulu. We're really heavy on the Hulu, aren't we? It premiered on Monday, February 17th, just a couple weeks ago. Actually, just last week. The series follows a romance between a human girl and an alien male when he and 6 others of his kind are integrated into a suburban high school 10 years after they landed on Earth and were consigned to an internment camp. So basically, imagine a world District 9 with humanoid aliens and the fact that they're, okay, combine three things, maybe two things, I don't know. District 9, humanoid aliens, and then picture 1960s America, black-white integration, and there you have it. That's star-crossed right there. Oh,
now,
okay, third thing, imagine a world with what was that other Roswell. So it's a combination of Roswell, District 9, and 1960s segregated America. That's star-crossed right there.
A heavy dose of teen angst. Well, it's CW. It's got to have that.
Yeah.
It's kind of.
Yeah.
I did have a question. You said the District 9 internment camp, is it as horrible of conditions, or are the area where they live, the internment camp, is it fairly decent condition?
It's not that bad. I mean, compared to the District 9 internment camp, no, not that bad. But it's not up to the conditions that a normal American is used to.
Sure. Okay.
It looks like an old West town, basically.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah. And the aliens look very human. The only difference is they have tattoos on their face. So they definitely took the Star Trek school of aliens here, because on Star Trek they either had tattoos. Or their noses were a little bit different, or
little ridges here and there on the face.
Yeah,
ears
were, mm-hmm. And here's a little Doctor Who connection. They have two hearts.
Just like the Time Lords.
Yeah.
Gallifreyans.
So star-crossed, very, like you said, CW, teen angst, a lot of that. And one of the things that I thought was cool about this series is it takes place, about 10 years, because it begins in October 2014. And I hate when shows do this. I hate where they start their premise way too soon in the future. Like, this is this fall that the aliens land. So if the aliens don't land in October, then I'm going to be highly disappointed. Because the CW got it wrong. No, the rest of the series takes place 10 years after, so 2024. And you see little differences in technology, The phones look different, and, there's holograms, kind of like Almost Human on the show Almost Human, which I love. And I hope that they're not going to cancel it, which they might. And I'm really pissed off.
It doesn't look good.
No. If you like the CW formula for shows, which is a lot of teen angst, but sprinkled with futuristic technology and aliens, then you will like Starcrossed. It very much has that Roswell vibe to it. Roswell, of course, before CW even existed. I think it was a UPN show. Or was it WB? I forget.
Gosh, I want to say it was WB.
Okay. Because, of course, WB and CW combined, or no, WB and UPN combined to make CW.
Yep.
Okay. There's our picks. Watch them if you dare, I guess. Before we wrap up the show, we have some feedback. A couple of pieces of feedback, actually. Last week, we had a story about whether aliens who are exploring the galaxy would be atheists. And that kind of led into a conversation about, whether space travelers should or shouldn't believe in God. So we got some feedback on that. Paul Duggan posted a link on the actual blog itself.
Oh, nice.
Where the podcast lives on the internet. With a link to an Arthur C. Clarke short story from 1955 called The Star. And it's about a group of space explorers from Earth who return from an expedition to a remote solar system where they discover the remnants of an advanced civilization destroyed when its sun went supernova. The group's chief astrophysicist is a Jesuit priest and is suffering from a deep crisis of faith triggered by some undisclosed event during the journey. So that's pretty much exactly what we were talking about, because it started with we were talking about aliens and are they atheists, and then kind of went into the whole, is it better to be an atheist or better to believe in God if you're out traveling into space? So that's perfect to what we were talking about. Perfect.
Nice. That's a great find, Paul. Thank you.
Yeah, I really want to read this. It sounds very interesting.
It does.
Yeah, yeah.
I've read like The Caves of Steel. I've read some other Arthur C. Clarke stuff. So yeah, I'm definitely going to check that out.
I love Arthur C. Clarke because he was definitely hard science fiction. Not a lot of fantasy. And
no.
Most of his stories took place in space. You know, we're space operas. Okay, so, and also Paul commented about the video that I shared last week of that flying saucer behind those clouds that looked really real. Well, it turns out that was a viral marketing campaign from 3 years ago. Damn it. Damn it, damn it, damn it.
Paul is on the ball, calling us on our BS here. Thank you, Paul.
He's our fact checker, apparently. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. We obviously need help in that department.
next time I bring a video to the show, I'm going to double check to make sure it's not a viral video hoax. Turns out it was part of a campaign for a pizza joint in Brazil. They showed, because it was neat, because from the perspective that we got was a first-person perspective, but on the actual end commercial that revealed that it was the pizza joint that was doing this thing, you see it from the other direction. You see it from across the street because there's a row, right? And they pull to the right side of the right-hand side of the road, but we see from the opposite side of the road, which is kind of neat.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, thank you, Paul. Appreciate that. And Jason from Kansas called in. We were talking about
speak
him.
Of the devil and who shall appear.
I know. We got to start doing that more often. $1 million, nice. Please. $1 million. Okay. So this is what Jason had to say. Here we go.
Hey, everybody. It's Jason from Kansas. Just wanted to say, first off, happy birthday, Dave. And also to let you guys know that next month, March 14th through 16th, is the Planet Comic-Con in Kansas City again. My wife and I will be attending and going in the Doctor Who garb. She's going to be a Dalek, and I'm going to be number 11. And
nice.
Anyways, I wanted to give you a highlight real quick. Sylvester McCoy is going to be there, and I'm going to try really hard to get some pictures of him, possibly with him, hopefully. And a lot, like basically the whole cast of Star Trek The Next Generation is going to be there. And Mr. William Shatner is going to be there, too.
Nice.
And a lot of other big-name stars and celebs and stuff. So I'm going to try to get pictures again and try to tag you guys in them so maybe you guys can use them as a topic or something, or at least share them with you. So anyways, that's all I had. Keep up the good work. Talk to you later. Bye.
All right. Thank you, Jason.
Cool. Thanks, Jason. I'm looking forward to that.
Man.
Absolutely. That sounds like an awesome guest list there. Whew.
Yeah, last week.
Celebs aplenty.
Last year, Jason was our reporter in Kansas City and shared a bunch of pictures with us that we posted on our Facebook page. And sounds like we'll be doing the same this year. So looking forward to that.
That's awesome.
All right. Thank you, Jason. And if you want to be a reporter just like Jason, you can call our voicemail number. If you're going to be at a convention, let us know, 805-328-3966 or galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Please follow us on Twitter, Google+, and Facebook. Just look for Galactic Netcasts and subscribe by going to galacticnetcasts.com/subscribe. And that's going to do it. Hey, don't forget to check out our other shows on the network, including the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, still in its infancy. See, the alien invasion's an old man, and the Sci-Fi Geeks Club is a newborn. It's a toddler, so still learning how to hasn't learned how to walk yet, still crawling. So we need your encouragement. So head on over to our website, galacticnetcasts.com, and listen or watch the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. We'd appreciate that.
It's a whippersnapper.
Wah! Wah! Okay, that's the show. Next week we'll be back for one more episode before I head back to Canada. So that will be episode 99. So we're basically doing a dramatic pause to 100. We're going to do 99, and then we're going to make you wait, and then we'll do the big 100 episode. Cool. All right.
Nice.
Before we get out of here, final thought, Brad.
Oh, man.
You weren't ready, were you?
Keeping true to form to the old days. Whenever you'd ask me, I'd go,
What are you looking forward to? What are you looking forward to in the next week or two as far as pop culture, sci-fi, anything on TV, movies kind of thing?
Sci-fi based, they just released another photo of the look that they're going for Ultron for Avengers 2, which that just came out now, today. So that's pretty freaking exciting. And they've already started principal photography in South Africa, actually. Mm-hmm. So looks like we're going to get a little bit of... probably T'Challa, maybe some of the Wakanda Black Panther who becomes a member of the Avengers eventually. I think they're slowly kind of building up the world stage. I mean, we've seen the Battle of New York, and now I think we're starting to see a little bit more of the world at large. And also, there was a big celebration in New York. Marvel has pretty much signed on the dotted line, and they are starting to produce their made-for-Netflix shows Marvel characters.
Yep, and these are all stories that we have posted on our social feed. So
yes.
Subscribe to it. You know, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and circle us on Google+. You'll get this information when it becomes available. So.
And the first story that they're going to be doing, the first one, is Daredevil.
Nice.
Without
Ben Affleck.
Without the Affleck, okay. Yes.
All right. He's busy being Batman.
Busy being Batman?
Yeah.
In all rights, it's kind of a step up being the Batman.
Yeah, it is. Definitely. All right. That's going to do it for this Alien Invasion, another Galactic Netcast in the books. Until next time.
Final thoughts for you?
Oh, final thoughts. I'm excited about Sci-Fi Geeks Club. So go ahead and subscribe, listen. Looking forward to it.
Well played, sir. Well played.
All right. We'll talk to you next week, Brad.
Sounds good. See you later.
Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.